It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. I hope you remember to set your clocks back. Charlie Potter on the Great Outdoors Show. Thank you so much for listening to me here on WGN Radio this morning. We've all lost an hour's sleep, and I doubt we went to bed an hour earlier just so that we had that extra hour's sleep. So this morning, and by the way, I am one of those individuals, I don't know how many of you are, I'm one of those individuals who wishes the clock never fell back. Just stay where it is. I really don't like it getting dark at 4:30 in the afternoon. And I'm sure many of you are that way. There's been a lot of discussion about it. I actually thought, or there was reports a year ago that we were not going to fall back this fall, but it didn't happen for some reason. I don't know what the reason was, but maybe if enough of us say we really don't want the clock falling back in the fall, we really don't want it to be dark at 4:30 in Chicago in the afternoon, maybe we'll be successful. But in the meantime, I'm going to take you down memory lane. I'm calling it memory lane because, sometime in about the 1880s, the rail service began a little earlier, but began down the Illinois River. And last Saturday morning, the 25th of October, was the opening day of one of the most hallowed days in the state of Illinois, the opening of duck season. And if you're not a duck hunter, you're probably saying, well, why is this a hollow day? I'm going to, over the next few minutes, maybe put it in perspective. So the Illinois River Valley likely eclipsed all other waterfowl areas on the continent, except for the coastal marshes of Louisiana and the Central Valley of California. It probably had only those two as equals. You read a lot about the Chesapeake, and Michener's written so much about the Chesapeake, and others have, and the great hunting lore of the Carolinas, and Havre de Grace, and Delmarva Peninsula, and the great heritage of the Outer Banks, and Madam Mesquite, and all these places steeped with hunting lore. They never had the number of waterfowl that the Illinois River Valley had. And beginning when I was age 10, which means that wasn't yesterday, I started each fall, each Friday afternoon, first with my parents, then on my own, then with friends, then with my own family, to leave Chicago and head south-southwest. Most people headed south-southwest, a few 140 years ago and out to the Mississippi, but most followed the Illinois River, and they picked it up in Ottawa, where the river begins to go south. Ottawa, LaSalle, Peru, Hennepin, Henry, Lacon, Chillicothe, Peoria, Bath, and on down to where the Illinois hits the Mississippi north of St. Louis, the most fabled waterfowl hunting ground in all the Midwest, and if not, maybe all America. So when I was 10 years old, my parents used to take me down to a place called Henry, and we would always hunt ducks on the open weekend. Last weekend, last Friday, I left Chicago and began that pilgrimage, and I drove down I drove down to the Illinois, and then I went down 29, and I drove through the Illinois Valley, and I went by all these places. Some of them are just tiny shacks, some of them much more elaborate clubhouses, which have sat empty since last December when the doors closed on the duck season in Illinois. And on this Friday night, the 24th of October, they were all buzzing with people, some who hadn't seen each other in a year. The little tiny shack, which maybe has outdoor plumbing, had its lights going. The much more elaborate clubhouses had all their lights going. All the way down that 200-plus mile run, hunters were returning to the marsh for the beginning of the fall season. And for me, I thought about all the years that I've done this. As I said, I started at age 10, which for me wasn't yesterday. And I thought of the places I've been and the people I've met, and the family memories, both with my parents and then with my own kids. So I drove down the Illinois Valley, and the silver maples in the valley were just in spectacular color, as they tend to be in late October. I talked last week about how the fall colors really were not very good in Illinois, and that's because of the drought we had, and they just can't have spectacular fall colors when you have a drought. However, when you're in the Illinois River Valley, you've got lots of moisture, lots of subsoil moisture. And so the silver maples were just in spectacular splendor. I went by Lake Snatchewan, and I went down to Peoria, Great Peoria Lake. And if you ever read any of the history of the Illinois River Valley, Peoria was sort of the hub, the center of the great market hunting days. And Illinois, in part, fed a nation. They used to say that Chicago butchered the beef to feed a nation. The Illinois River fed a nation with the wildfowl that were shot on the Illinois River. And interestingly, if you look at the records of the old clubs, the earliest club in the state of Illinois, and I believe the second oldest in America, Swan Lake Club, founded in 1882. Snatchewan Club, founded in 1884. These were places where people got off the rail, got off at the depots, were picked up in a horse and buggy, and taken over to the Illinois River, where they hunted sometimes for a week, sometimes for longer. All the game was sold for markets. There were no seasons. Think about that today. So if you read the logs of these old, old clubs, they shot swans in August. They shot Canada geese in August. They shot multiple numbers, multitudes of ducks in August, which makes you realize the Illinois River in and of itself was a fantastic breeding ground, because ducks were not migrating from the prairies in August. These were resident birds, and they shot in the summer, they shot in the fall, they shot in the winter, they shot in the spring, they shot year-round. And of course, we know what happened. The population plummeted, but the population also was plummeting because their prairie breeding grounds were being devastated. And in Illinois, we were draining 99% of the wetlands. And Al Hochbaum and other historians in the waterfowl world often must. I wonder if there were as many ducks produced in Indiana and Illinois and Iowa and Wisconsin and southern Minnesota as there were in the prairies. Much better weather, much longer breeding grounds, much more shallow marshes, so the invertebrates, which all the ducklings need to eat, could hatch and grow when they hatched. And that explains why the hunting on the Illinois River was so phenomenal long before the migration started, because yes, the Illinois River was also a prodigious breeding ground. So as I went south, I passed all these places, these historic places, and all the way on down to Grand Isle, which is south of, which is near Bath, and the great duck hunting marshes, which this whole state is known for, Emmequon, which is now the Nature Conservancy's marsh. And as it grew dark, you could just see the lights of all these little places. Some of them, I said, big, some of them really small. They all were on. I continued on south, and I ended up down in the Kaskaskia River bottom, which has been a place I've now welcomed a quarter century of opening days with my family. And I pulled in to the small little log cabin where I was going to stay with some friends, and the fire is roaring, and the outside, the barbecue pit's going. It was a beautiful night. There were a few quacks of ducks and weeps of wood ducks in the marsh below, but it really struck me that this opening day in Illinois is a ritual that's been passed on now for 140 years. And as transportation improved and the railroad no longer transported everyone and people went by vehicles, more and more people came. And yet today, the hunting on the Illinois River Valley, as it is across so much of America, is just so small, a fraction of what it was. But that does not diminish people loving to get together and telling stories and making memories. And whether you went out on the opening day last week and never shot your gun or shot one duck, or whether you were lucky enough to have a terrific hunt, that probably doesn't change the color of what opening day of the waterfowl season, the duck season in Illinois means, and what it means in so many other places. Certainly Arkansas, steeped in tradition and so much history on the Grand Prairie of Arkansas, the duck hunting capital of the world being Stuttgart. But really, it's Illinois where the commercial hunting days began. And it's Illinois where the huge bags were made. And Illinois where, for me at least, and for so many of you listening, the memories have been made on that night before the opening morning when you stay up way too late. You never get enough sleep. You're restless. The alarm goes off early. It's in the dark. There's that familiar smell of the marsh, one that I guess has drawn so many of us here for so long. So Illinois has a great history, steeped in history when it comes to duck hunting. And it is great to see those flickering lights throughout the Illinois River Valley once more this past October 24th, on the night before the opening season. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors, and we're going to leave the Illinois River Valley, and we're going to go about as far north as we can. We're going to go to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and also someone that's steeped in tradition. Our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Headline is, Interior Department said it would allow a contentious road to be built through the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge in southwestern Alaska, and that it would open up, quote-unquote, pristine Alaska wilderness to drilling in long-running feud. It is indeed a long-running feud, and I'm not here to take sides. I'm just here to say it's like ping pong. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is off limits to oil and gas exploration. Then it's back on. Then it's off limits. Then it's back. And it really depends. It really depends what administration is in the White House when this happens. During his first term, President Trump signed a 2017 tax bill that required oil and gas leasing and sales in the coastal plain of the Arctic Plain. But the Biden administration suspended and then canceled these leases. On Thursday, the Interior Department said it would hold an oil and gas lease sale in the coastal plain as soon as this winter. It also said it would reinstate 7 oil and gas leases in the refuge the state of Alaska acquired in 2021, but they have been canceled 2 years later by the Biden administration. There's a reason that there isn't a lot of oil and gas exploration on the north slope of Alaska in recent times. It's because nobody's certain how long it will last. So under today's world, it's going to be opened up again for drilling. And the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, having been there, I'm, by the way, probably one of the few people that has been there. I can tell you it is a desolate, absolutely desolate place. It's also a beautiful place in its desolateness and its remoteness and its wildness. But I have to believe that in 2025, we have lots of ways to extract oil and gas from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge that isn't going to do any environmental harm. We've had the Trans-Alaska Pipeline now for 50 years. It's turned out to be interesting. It's where the caribou go in the winter because the heat from the oil makes it warmer for them. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, and those of you listening, I'm sure, have your own views. But I do think we need to put it in context. We need energy. We know that. The transformation to non-carbon fuel emission energy is a long way down the road. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge holds a tremendous amount of oil and gas. This isn't 1950 or 1940 or 1970 when we would have really catastrophic environmental issues. So, sure, we had the Deepwater Horizon and we've had the Exxon Valdez oil spill. We have had these problems. But if we don't go to places where there's oil, I don't know how we as a country have food, fiber, and energy to take us into the next 50 years. And I know some of you don't agree with that at all, but I will say this about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It is vast. The size of it is incomprehensible. The amount of drilling that's going to take place is like looking for a grain of sand or a postage stamp on an envelope. It's really, really small. And this notion that the National Wildlife Refuge of the Arctic is going to be destroyed, I don't think that's correct. I think we tend to paint things in broad brushes, and the broad brush is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge should be on the North Slope, should be off the radar forever for drilling. It's too special. It's one of the last best places. That may be true, but I come back to, I think we can do this in a way where wildlife populations are not harmed. Some ways they may be enhanced with some of the mitigation and reclamation work that'll be done. It's highly controversial, but I do think as a country, we have to decide one way or the other and not playing, as I said a moment ago, ping pong with every other administration canceling leases or stopping oil and gas. Right now, we're an administration that wants to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. I hope it's done in an environmentally responsible way. I'm a believer that it will be. And I think that when you look at the scale of it, it is incorrect to say that we'll be destroying the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It is just where we're going to be drilling is such a tiny place. And the migratory birds that use it are likely not to be impacted at all. Some of you are coming out of your chairs when I say that, but I've been there. Doesn't mean I know that much about it, other than I've seen the vastness of it, the desolate of it, the beauty of it at the same time. It is an extraordinarily important place for nesting birds, particularly waterfowl. I don't think that's going to change. Before I go off the air, one thing I have to comment on is the federal government shutdown. Good luck getting a federal duck stamp. The duck season opened, as I mentioned, in Illinois and the most hunted region of the state last Saturday morning, and you went online to the Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Interior site, no duck stamps available because the government shut down. So it's still shut down. If you go on to the website of the Department of Interior, you'll find out you can't buy a duck stamp. So we've moved from having to go to the post office to buy your duck stamp. And by the way, if you go to the post office, try to find a duck stamp, they're going to look at you and say, we don't do that anymore. Very hard to find them. So right now, with hunting seasons opening all across America, you cannot get a federal duck stamp. I don't know how wardens are going to treat this, but it is a real issue. People cannot get their federal duck stamps because of the federal government shutdown. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed my little tale about going down the Illinois River. It's a true treasure. And unfortunately, it's nothing like it was. We'll never know what it was like. But the way it is today is still a very special place. Have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.